This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Happy Thursday to you here on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester alongside Jad Chambers with you for the next 2 hours here on KFH. You can hear us, of course, right here on 97.5 FM and 1240 AM. You can hear us always on the Odyssey app if you're outside the area. If you want to go back in time and listen to the podcasted version, the Odyssey app is the place for you. Or you can watch us, too, if you'd like. You've got lots of ways to do that. 12 News Connected Plus on all your smart devices. Excited to be there, as well as Facebook, YouTube, X. You can interact with the show by calling the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app, and you can leave us your comments on our video streams as well that we can take right over the air. Glad to be here with you on a Thursday. It's a Thursday Night Football Thursday. It's a Major League Baseball playoff race Thursday. It's a get you ready for a football weekend Thursday. And we're here for all of it. Tommy, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Happy Thursday. Good to see you this morning. Good to be back in the chair. And, you know, obviously we're getting into, like you mentioned, a football weekend, but all eyes are on the Royals right now. What's going to be happening with them this weekend? And, you know, will we continue with baseball next week? Will there be October baseball for the Royals? I think that's, you know, got everybody on the edge of their seats.
Yeah, that's where things, you know, when we're not actively on a football day, that's what we're paying attention to. It's what we've been paying attention to for basically the last 6 months. This dream season for Kansas City is coming down to the wire, which surprised nobody. You know, they've dealt with a lot this year, a lot of injuries, a lot of adversity, a lot of low expectations to be in this position. They win another game against a team they should be beating. 3-0 last night, another collective pitching performance, as we kind of wait to hear the word on Michael Lorenzen, who's finally back and then had to leave the game with, I believe it was officially called lower leg fatigue. Now, remember, he has missed time because of a hamstring issue. So that's concerning, but the bullpen bailed him out.
It's not. The reporting from all of the you know, people that cover the team, follow the team, that I saw last night, was that this was planned, that he came in to pitch a couple of innings. Daniel Lynch was already up and working. The plan all along for Lorenzen was to work a couple of innings as the opener. He's available to pitch out of the bullpen this weekend. They wanted him to be fresh in case they need him for any of the games in Atlanta this weekend. So my understanding after the game, all of the reporters that cover the team, that's what that basically they were all reporting.
The broadcast here on KFH, I was listening as I was taxiing kids around, was that it was lower leg fatigue, and they were, so that's good news. And probably pretty smart from Quatrero, by the way, although I don't know that you should be counting eggs before you know, they hatch in any individual game. But it worked out last night, and the bullpen's been really good lately, by the way, like really good lately. They get a just enough offense, still needs to be more. But still, you know, whatever, you take them. And now the magic number is 3. They don't get any help. Everybody won their games yesterday. So you've got Minnesota winning, Detroit winning, and that means Kansas City stays right now in that second wild card spot, tied by record with Detroit. But remember, they have the tiebreaker over Detroit. They do not have the tiebreaker over Minnesota. Minnesota finishes up their series with the Marlins, the 100 loss Marlins. I thought we were going to get lucky again there for a little bit, and then the Twins exploded late in the game. So we'll see. It's three with four games to play. One more against the Nationals and a mess against Atlanta. You'd really like that to get to two. You know, you kind of need to win today, because who the hell knows what's about to happen this weekend. And I don't just mean because the Braves are good. I mean, because we've got a hurricane that we're dealing with, and Major League Baseball fouled that up. So what's happened now is they've been forced with the Mets to push their series to a Monday doubleheader if necessary. It's almost certainly going to be necessary no matter what happens for Atlanta. And so there was an outside chance, and you've talked about it, Tommy, that the Braves would be eliminated by the time that this series rolled around. Now there's no chance of that. And the Royals will have to deal with travel no matter what happens here. And they were already, if they reached the postseason, going to have one of these situations where they just don't see home for a while. They got these two series. If they open the playoffs, it'll be on the road. Like, it would be a while before they're home. Now they also have to, in the middle of that travel, mix in trying to travel through a hurricane. And so who knows what time they can get to Atlanta to play that series. What I have not heard is that there's any danger or indication they wouldn't be able to start the series tomorrow, which seems odd to me because I think the hurricane's supposed to hit today. So I don't know what's going to happen in that series. No idea. But it's going to involve the Royals' chances to make the playoffs no matter what happens. And so you'd really like to get this one against Washington today, and then you just hope for help and get the magic number to one by the time that series starts.
Yeah, I think that unfortunately the worst possible scenario for the Royals as far as this final series against the Braves came true because of the news, because of the hurricane, and what the Braves are going to have to do with their schedule with the Mets. You mentioned it, that, you know, basically playoff implications will almost for certain be in effect for Atlanta for this weekend against Kansas City. But I think even bigger, and something you didn't mention that I think is a huge ramification for Kansas City with their weekend series against Atlanta, is now it looks like the Braves will have their top two arms pitching against the Royals this weekend, where before it looked like they were going to be able to avoid Chris Sale and Max Fried. Now it looks like they're probably going to have to face both of those guys this weekend, where the Braves were going to pitch them against the Mets. Now they can't because of the hurricane. They'll push the rotation back, and, you know, it sure looks like the best two arms are going to be now going up against the Royals.
Just win your games. You just got to win your games. The magic number's three. Can they get three wins in the last four? Can Minnesota do it? Does Baltimore let off the gas at all? I saw and was sad to see that Corbin Burns is pitching tonight. You know, that
Patrick
was one
Corbin.
Other thing. No. Sorry, for Baltimore.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Patrick Corbin's pitching for the Nationals.
Yeah. So Corbin Burns is pitching tonight for Baltimore.
Yeah,
and I had this hope of, like, well, if he's got to get one more start in, maybe he'll start one of those final games there. But no, that'll happen tonight, and then they'll rest him for the postseason because Baltimore's in. So it's like all the outside factors are sort of piling up against the Royals. But Tommy, at the end of the day, they're winning games again. And so I don't think you can be too disappointed. Like, the, you know, the schneid is at least off, and you hope all the bad luck is out of it. But so, you know, what are we at? Four runs in two games against the Nationals. It's not like
not
a badge
great.
Of honor.
Not great.
Not a badge of honor, but zero runs allowed in the same two games. Yeah, you know, you'll take it. And look, without, and who knows with Pasquantino, but this is probably what the offense is. And so there's hope still that Bobby Witt Jr. gets on one of his torrid stretches and just shoulders the load. Salvador Perez fully capable of doing the same thing. Neither of those guys is like hot right now, I would say. But this pitching has been incredible. And they just have to punch their ticket. If they can punch their ticket, I'm going to like their chances, Tommy, because the pitching is, you know, the bread and butter of this team is back after, you know, a couple of months of, you know, a little, like, it's back. And that's big deal in the postseason. So We'll see. You've got to win this day game against the Nationals, though. You just have to win today.
Yeah, from a bullpen perspective, they've been pretty rock solid outside of Carlos Hernandez recently. He's really been the only reliever, at least in the last, I don't know, four or five games, that has been, you know, shaky a little bit in his outings. The starting pitching, I mean, Cole Reagans pitched a great game on Tuesday night for the Royals. Of course, Lorenzen and Lynch combined for, you know, a good amount of innings and really shut the Nationals down last night. You mentioned the offense, and, you know, yeah, let's call a spade a spade. Like, they're not an offensive juggernaut right now. They're not going to be an offensive juggernaut, especially with Vinny Pasquantino out. We know that. Top to bottom in the lineup, like, there are some areas where they can get it done. In some areas where they've just struggled, and really the areas that they've struggled, we've talked about it before, driving in runs, runners in scoring position, that's been a major issue for Kansas City. They were better at that last night. You know, hopefully it's kind of like when, you know, a basketball player has a cold shooting streak, and you just need to see the ball go in. If you see the ball go in the hoop, you know, that maybe lifts the lid a little bit and, you know, helps you feel a little bit more free. Hopefully the fact that the Royals were able to drive in three last night will help them in today's game and then moving forward. And, you know, last night, I think what was, I think, important, honestly, for Kansas City was that they scored three runs without Bobby Witt Jr. having a good offensive game. Salvi had a good game, but really it was Gurriel and it was Robbie Grossman. Those two guys had great at-bats last night for the Royals. I like that a lot. Robbie Grossman, I think, was probably the least talked about waiver wire acquisition at the end of last month from J.J. Piccolo, because everybody was talking about Tommy Pham and they were talking about Yuli Gurriel. They weren't really talking about Robbie Grossman. Now, Grossman's not going to light the world on fire. He's not going to be somebody that you can hang your hat on. But at least last night, when the Royals needed good quality at-bats, whether he was hitting the ball or he was walking, he walked a couple of times and got on base also. They were really productive at-bats last night for Robbie Grossman in a lineup where you desperately need somebody to step up and actually do something. I don't care who it is. It could be Robbie Grossman or somebody else as long as somebody's doing
Massey,
it. And it was Grossman
too, yeah.
Last night also.
Yeah, and Massey. Yeah, I'm with you. It can be a different cast of characters each night. You do need the consistency out of Bobby Witt Jr., probably Tommy Pham, honestly, at this point, Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez. Ken brings up the Patrick Corbin thing, not Corbin Burns. Patrick Corbin is who goes for the Nationals tonight, and he has not been awesome. He has allowed 16 runs in his last four starts. He has not been, you know, he was pretty good in August. He's been much shakier in September. He's hittable. Though this is, you know, Patrick Corbin back in the day was really, really good. He's not that anymore, but he's a crafty veteran that's been around for a long time. Last start of the year, just got to score some runs. And, you know, you can't count on zeros on the other side. You can't count on ones and twos and zeros. Like, they have to score some runs, be aggressive. And I don't know psychologically how much it helps to, bear with me here, wrap it up earlier and allow your bats to go into a couple of games just free and like no pressure at all. And I don't know if you could parlay that into the postseason. Like, it's really interesting to me. Do the Royals enter the postseason with no pressure, or do they enter the postseason with high expectations? I don't think anymore, the way this is finished, there's going to be much pressure or expectation on the Royals. Like there maybe had been before the last week, right? Like, if they get there, they're going to be one of the teams that people just sort of slough off to the side, and that makes the Royals more dangerous. Like, they're more dangerous when they're the upstart, nobody expects us to do anything kind of team. And I think we've seen that more from the offense than the pitching. But the offense, when it's, you know, kind of free and easy and pressure free, is a much better offense than when they're feeling like they have to do something every at bat, like they have been the last 10 days. They're not equipped for that.
I do think it can go one of two ways. One way is the way that you just described. If they make it into the playoffs, and then, you know, it's kind of like the monkey is off their back a little bit and they can go in free and clear. I do think that the opposite does potentially apply, where they've expended so much energy getting to the playoffs that they finally get there and they're like, okay, we made it. And then just like they're exhausted, you know, because they've expended so much and not just physical energy throughout 162 games, because every team has done that, but the mental and emotional exhaustion of just being on the fringe basically all season long, where they've been the hunter, not the hunted, essentially all season. They've chased after the Guardians basically from day one all the way to now. You know, you get into the playoffs, yeah, you can reset everything. And I do think that it's probably more likely than not that the mentality becomes we're playing with house money and nobody expects us to be there. But on the flip side, it could also be we're exhausted. We're exhausted to be that, you know, and it just ends up, you know, maybe not being enough.
Ah, my goodness. It's fun and it's stressful and I love it so much. I love playoff baseball probably more than anything. Like the baseball playoff stretch, if you've got a team that you're invested in every day, and I've said this, it's probably my favorite thing in sports. You just don't get it all that often, or at least I haven't with the teams that I've, you know, followed my whole life. And it is as far as like an emotional and time investment, you get it 7 days a week. You know, football's the best. Football's unquestioned king, but it all sort of builds to a couple of days. This is every day. This is stressful, and I love it. The Royals will play right here on KFH at 12 o'clock today. That is when the coverage begins. The Tigers also play early, and then the Twins will play tonight at 6:40. We can keep our eye on the Mariners, but they're almost eliminated at this point. So that's what's happening with the Royals. Don't forget, we'll have our K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald coming up later today to talk about, well, what was, again, it was the strangest college football game I've maybe ever seen in my life, and what that means moving forward for K-State. We'll have that. IHOP hotline is open for you, 869-1240. We'll give away a little HTO later in the show. I want to say thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here on KFH. Great cup of coffee. Here in the Odyssey Studios. Let's come back. I want to get Tommy's thoughts on, well, we got two stories nationally that are taking the headlines. Sluka, the quarterback at UNLV, you know, takes twists and turns and twists and turns. He said, she said, all kinds of stuff there. So we'll get the latest on the UNLV quarterback situation. And I want Tommy's take on this. I feel like it's manufactured, but the Travis Kelce, you know, and this comes with being a part of pop culture, right? As his show debuted, I think, last night. People think he's disconnected. He's not interested. His numbers haven't been there, so much so that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have to talk about it again yesterday. There's a clip on the sideline that, like, Entertainment Tonight or everybody led their shows with for 15 minutes. Is he, well, what's wrong? You know, we'll get to the Travis Kelce conundrum. When we come back on Sports Daily. Don't go away. Albrecht and Caster, glad to be with you on a Thursday.
KFH.
All that baseball coverage on KFH brought to you by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on iPhone 16 Pro. You'll hear baseball right here on KFH and on the Odyssey app noon today. Royals, Nationals. Simply download the Odyssey app, search for KFH Game Time. Tommy, we're going to talk a little football now, though. Travis Kelce is at 8 catches, 69 yards through 3 games. Everybody's worried about Travis Kelce, except apparently his coach. He basically, Reed, you know, I'll paraphrase this to some degree. Say, he said yesterday, I know people are saying that he's old or whatever and has distractions and all this. The opposing defenses don't think that. His point being, opposing defenses are still keying in on taking Travis Kelce away. And so you've got this situation where everybody sees this lack of numbers. And I think a few things are happening here. Most importantly, yeah, defenses are keying in on Kelce and they're still continuing to try and take him away. That's why Rashee Rice gets so many catches, by the way. That's why I did last year. Teams are more willing to let Rice beat them than Kelce. Clearly, that's what's happening. It's what Andy Reid's talking about. Travis Kelce has alluded to the same thing to a lesser degree. I think he's a little disappointed in his lack of production, only in the sense that he feels like he can be doing more. Mahomes said he feels guilty for it, but when he talks to Travis Kelce, all that Kelce cares about is winning. Kelce's 34 years old. He's already at least in the conversation, if not solidified himself as the greatest tight end of all time, at least as a pass catcher. And he's going for a third straight Super Bowl. His life is set. Like football, as far as the financial components and the stats, like he's already the GOAT. He's already a Hall of Famer. The last thing to check on a box for a guy who's 34 playing at a position where guys at his age don't typically either make it that far or have much value is to historically win this third Super Bowl. And so he doesn't care. They're 3-0, right? Is Travis Kelce going to stay at this pace the rest of the season? I would guess no, not if the Chiefs keep winning these games, because defenses are going to have to switch up what they do. Like at some point, they're going to have to take that attention to Rashee Rice. That'll open up Travis Kelce. I know Kelce feels like he can be doing more as a pass catcher, but guess what? They're also a run first team and he's blocking more. I've got no issue, Tommy, with the production level of Kelce and, you know, the absurdity of the distractions, and that comes with the celebrity life that he's created. So I don't like feel bad for him there. I just think it's a little silly. If you watch football, you know what's happening with Kelce. A, he's older, and B, defenses don't want him to beat them. And the Chiefs aren't deep enough offensively to just get to dictate what defenses do.
I'm not really ready yet to say that I'm concerned whatsoever about Travis Kelce. And really, it has nothing to do with Kelce himself. It's the fact that the Chiefs are 3-0, and exactly. they haven't really needed him to be the vintage Travis Kelce to win those games. Now, will they need him at some point in the season to be vintage Travis Kelce to win a game? Probably. And so at that point, if they knock and the door isn't answered, then at that point I'm willing to have that conversation and saying that I'm concerned about his lack of production. But as of right now, they're 3-0. That to me overall is more important than the individual stat line of what Travis Kelce has. And really, it's even more important than this perceived body language or being disconnected or a lack of involvement or caring or whatever it is, which is all crap. It's all manufactured fake, you know, narrative, social media storylines. That's all it is. Though,
I mean, you and he invites that stuff. I mean, sure. he's a now movie star that dates the most famous person in the world. Like you invite that. Sure. That's what I mean. I don't have like sympathy. I don't care.
No. It's I just not, don't buy into not, it.
Right.
I don't buy into it. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I'm not losing sleep over it because, again, they're 3-0. If they were 0-3, if they were 1-2, and that was the way that he had been, you know, performing, the lack thereof throughout those first three games, then yes, let's have a conversation about they need him to get back into form to win football games. That really hasn't been the case through three games. But again, my point is eventually they probably will need that. I'd like to think that he will answer the call. If he doesn't, then I'm willing to have the conversation.
And at that point, he could also just be 34 and not as good, which is also very, very likely. The only people that need to be concerned right now are fantasy football players invested early picks or whatever in Travis Kelce, because I don't think his numbers are going to jump off the screen. I did think they could and probably would when this Chiefs offense was completely healthy, because I thought at that point, defenses finally, for the first time in 2 years, would not be able to handle Kelce the same way. Like if Hollywood Brown's out there running free with Worthy and with Rice, you know, and fast forward to when Worthy is more comfortable in the offense, I mean, you can't do these same things to Kelce, but guess what? Right now they can. And so they will. And if I was opposing defensive coordinator and you just like off the cuff said, what's going to be your key to beating the Chiefs? I would say, well, I got to make sure Travis Kelce doesn't beat me. Right. I got to make sure Travis Kelce isn't picking up every first down when we have third and long. I got to make sure that doesn't happen, and then we'll take our chances elsewhere. And so this kind of goes back to what we were talking about Tuesday, I guess, and we disagreed on this a little bit. This is where, like, as long as Kelce is, like, this is what I mean when I say the Chiefs are comfortable with how they're playing offense right now. They're not comfortable. Mahomes isn't comfortable with the fact that he hasn't looked himself. But as far as, like, running the ball as much as they have, playing the style of offense, I think they're totally comfortable in that. And if Kelce is, and he is, he said he is, as long as they're winning games, that's what I mean. I don't know that a lot is going to change until a defense steps up and says, you will not run the ball on us, or you will not let Rashee Rice have 12 targets. Then this is the way they're going to play offense. And that's what I mean. They're comfortable with that.
The clarification, and there's some context around this. The clarification is they're comfortable with the style in which they're
correct.
Playing. Yes. I don't believe they're comfortable in the quality of the
absolutely
offense
not.
That
and they I
don't have
think
shown
they
through
be,
three games.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the disagreement was, because, you know, you can say they're comfortable in the way they're playing. Okay, well, that can mean two different things. That can mean the style in which they play and the overall output of the way that they're...
Correct.
Yeah, and I nobody is happy and comfortable with the quality overall of the offense, I don't think. I think that they'll settle for it because they've won games, but they're not content with it. They're not happy
about
it.
That comes down to one thing. They're not comfortable with the way Mahomes isn't comfortable 100%. With the way Mahomes is. 100%. That's what it is. Because they are comfortable with the effectiveness of the run game. They are comfortable with the effectiveness of, you know, Rashee Rice and what they're not comfortable. And it starts with Mahomes. And look, it's a difficult thing to evaluate because he's not being asked and won't be likely asked to put up large quantities of statistics. Decision-making, though, can certainly be better. And that's what's really hurt him right now, is he's made some bad decisions. So that's where, that needs to be better, certainly. I don't think anybody's concerned with it, because we've got a body of work now to go back on and be like, yeah, he'll be fine. Because, you know, how could you not think that when it's Mahomes? But yeah, he can play better. But as far as how they've won games, why they're going the way that they're going on offense, that's where I would say they're totally comfortable. Execution can be much higher, but I think they're in their wheelhouse right now of, here's how we want to play football. We're going to run the crap out of the ball, and we're going to have to funnel an offense through kind of like one receiver right now. What I'd be curious to see is if a defense ever does come up and say, all right, Rice isn't doing that to us. Like, we're gonna make sure he's not doing that. At that point, does that open up Kelce or Worthy? Because it ain't going to be Juju anymore. Juju's there to block, and he's there to not make mistakes, and I'm glad that he's there. Don't get me wrong. But if it's not Rice, is Kelce at 34 years old, can he still be that guy? And or Worthy, as rookie receivers go, and even if we look back to Rice last year, as we get into week 6, 7, 8, is Worthy up to speed where now he's going to torch defenses? Those are the things I want to see. But until they do it, if they keep playing the way they are, the Chiefs are like, yep, great, we'll give Rice 12 targets and we'll run the ball.
Well, and I do think that the immediate concern, you know, right in front of them this weekend against the Chargers, is that I think really, as far as the style in which they play, you're going to see a lot of running the football from Kansas City, because statistically for the Chargers, and I know that they're banged up, and I know that Derwin James is suspended for the game and all of that, but statistically through three games, the Chargers have a pretty good secondary. They stopped the pass decent, you know, under Harbaugh in his first year in LA. And so you combine that with the fact that the passing game for Kansas City with Mahomes, he's not happy with the way that it is. I don't think that this is just magically in week 4 going to be the week that everything clicks with the passing game. I still think that the Chiefs' recipe for success immediately is going to be hammering the run. Of course, we know that Kareem Hunt is on the active roster. Is he going to be a total difference maker from start to finish? Probably not, but he can certainly help them where they've struggled the most, and that's in the red zone. And that's a huge opportunity for Kareem Hunt to come in and stake his claim in that backfield, because they've been so poor in the red zone. And that's where, even as Kareem Hunt's overall skill set and statistics have declined over the years, that's one area where he still has had success, and that's in the red zone, even a year ago with Cleveland. And so that's where they'll utilize him. You combine him with Pirine and with Carson Steele. I think that they're going to just absolutely hammer the run, because I don't think with the Chargers secondary, it's going to be a week for just, you know, Mahomes to run wild all over them.
the no Joey Bosa or Nick Bo, which Bosa? Nick Bosa? Joey,
Joey
Bosa.
Joey
no
Bosa
Joey
Bosa. Chargers,
no
yeah.
Joey Bosa for the Chargers obviously helps the pass game too. But again, the Chiefs aren't going to do that unless a defense wants them to, right? Like they're not when they make up the game plan. If you're asking me, like, what do the Chiefs want to do offensively? I would tell you that they want to power run the football to set up the pass. That's what they want to do right now. So a defense is going to have to take that away from them if that's not going to be. And the thing is, with that interior line, they can impose that will really on anybody. It's not like
it's with the interior line. Number one, that's most important with Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. But number two, it's also the fact that they don't really have a running back on the roster that is like a bounce to the outside kind of guy, like get the edge and be able to turn it upfield. It's more about, I mean, whether you're talking about Steele or P. Ryan or even Kareem Hunt, it is a up the middle, you know, run guys over or, you know, make them miss, but more between
that's
the tackles type runner. 100%.
Right. They want their backs to just go straight up the field and pick up yards. You know, it's just so weird. Even though we saw it for an entire season last year, basically, it's still so strange to think about the Chiefs offense doing this, but this is what it is. This is by design the way it is. I don't know if it would have been this way with Hollywood Brown. I don't think it would have been, but the reality is the Chiefs are a Rashee Rice injury away from disaster right now. And so this is the way that they need to try to play offense every time they take the field until a defense stops them from doing it. I mean, that's what they need to do. And I think that's what they'll do against the Chargers. It's wild to see a number, and it just got up to 40. It moved a little bit, but the Chiefs, a Kansas City Chiefs over under was under 40 points as of yesterday. It's moved up, but that's just crazy to think about. Just wild to think about. I think Kareem Hunt's factor, by the way. I think he's going to get touches.
Do you think he'll be effective in his first game out, or is there a ramp up period? Do you think
not based on anything we've seen recently, but motivation is always an interesting thing. Kareem Hunt basically saying, I'm ready to show that I've still got it. I think he'll help him in the red zone. I thought that was a good point by Dan Israel. The experience there is helpful. Like I would imagine that he becomes sort of their red zone back because of his versatility. I still think Carson Steele right now leads the team in carries and is more of a go-to, but Kareem Hunt I've told you, I think he's lost a step. He is versatile. He's a good pass blocker. He's a good pass catcher. And he was at one point a really effective straight line runner. So I don't know, but I think Carson Steele gets the,
yeah, Kareem will be a red zone guy. I think he can also really help them on third down.
Then that cuts into P. Ryan's role.
It does kind of. But, I mean, in my opinion, I think the primary utilization for Samaje P. Ryan, the main design for him in this offense, is always going to be catching passes out of the backfield to fill that Jerick McKinnon role. That's what he did in Denver. P. Ryan caught a bunch of passes out of the backfield with Denver. That was his role. So if you can have him do that more and lean more on a guy like Kareem Hunt on the third and short, then you've got sort of your designations for each running back and what they do well.
Isn't it funny too? Like, is Samaje it was on the last game's broadcast. Do you remember a running back that has been more benefited from one particular just like style thing that happened? Like, to think about when you think about Samaje Perine when he was in college, if you'd have told me, oh yeah, he's going to be a pass catching specialist in the NFL. You know what the most catches he had in any college season was, Tommy?
I'm guessing not many.
15. Mm. Over 3 years, and he played basically as much as you can play for 3 years at Oklahoma. He caught 40 passes in 3 years. To think that he has become a pass, the guy that I believe still, if not, he broke it at the time, most rushing yards in an individual game.
Yeah.
Never caught any passes
in college.
Wasn't that
against Kansas? Didn't he run all over the Jayhawks to set that record?
I think so. Has become the league's like stereotype pass catching specialist. I laugh at that all the time. I'm like, Samaje Perine, boy, Like, of all the things we thought we'd see out of a player as he came into the NFL, that is not something that I ever thought we'd be saying about Samaje Perine.
Yeah, so that did happen against the Jayhawks. I forgot about that. November 22nd, 2014, Perine, the most rushing yards in a single game for OU, 427 yards on the ground for Oklahoma. I mean, that's just insane. Of course,
that's
Oklahoma won
the
game 44-7. That's the guy that is now a pass catching specialist in the NFL.
All because and they talked about it on the broadcast. They asked him about it. And he was like, I don't know, one day in practice or one day in a game, they just threw me a pass and I caught it and they kept throwing it to me. And now he's become this something silly like that. It's so funny to me.
He was a freshman.
I think about Samaje Perine
when he did that. I forgot he was a freshman. That's insane.
He was incredible in college. And it didn't translate, and that's okay, because I don't think a lot of scouts thought it was going to translate that way anyway. But that's his role. Good for him. He's made a long NFL career out of it.
Here's a trivia question for you. Who had the record before Samaje Perine?
I know the answer. It is one of the Wisconsin backs. Which one was it?
Former Chief.
Is it Melvin Gordon?
It was Melvin Gordon the week before. Okay. He held the record for 1 week. He rushed for 408 the week prior.
I was gonna say maybe Ron Dane, but Melvin Gordon. I knew it was one of the Wisconsin guys. All right, 869-1240. That is the IHOP hotline. We're gonna give away some HTO right now. Don't forget, we got Tim Fitzgerald coming up in just a little bit. But let's give away some HTO. We'll give you a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from. We'll give you a free iced or hot coffee. Right now, all you got to do to win both of those is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. These are good for any of the Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. Get you a drink. Get ready for the weekend. Here we go. We'll talk a little Thursday night football when we come back. Cowboys, what a disaster. What a mess. They get Thursday night football against the Giants. I don't even know what to do with it. We'll talk about that. By the way, programming note, PJ Glasser, our betting insider that normally joins us in this segment, will join us tomorrow. A little scheduling change there. But we'll talk Thursday night football anyway. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Tommy, has God ever created better golf weather than what we're seeing this week? Upper 70s, sunny, very little wind. It has been, outside of the fact that we need rain so desperately, it has been really, really nice this week weather-wise.
I feel like it always happens this way when the weather is beautiful. I have no time to utilize it. And when I actually am free and can go and do something, it's pouring down rain or, it's windy as all get out. So anyway, it's beautiful out there. I've enjoyed watching it out my office window.
You can play through the rain. I think everybody would be happy with that right now, but it is a good time to golf. Crestview's got 36 holes. You can almost always find a tee time because of that out there. We're both members. We love it. There was a time we were golfing a little more this year. Hasn't been the last few weeks for either of us. Maybe next week I can try to find a time to get out there, but they do have a lot to choose from. Great restaurant, great bar. I think my wife has been there in the last couple of days. She might be there right now playing tennis. I'm not sure. But give Crestview a call. Tell them we sent you. We appreciate their support. Tommy, Thursday night football. All I can say about this Cowboys season so far is they deserve this. And that's hard to say as a Cowboys fan, but they absolutely do. They have done nothing to get better and they're not better. And it shouldn't surprise anybody. They'll be good enough to win a bunch of games. I suspect that they will tonight. I suspect that they'll show up big and probably look pretty impressive. It's a 5.5-point spread. I'm probably comfortable with that. I'm probably on the Cowboys tonight. The Giants funnel everything through their unbelievable rookie Malik Nabers, but I think they're outmatched here. Cowboys won't be able to run the ball. I don't really have a thought on the over-under of this one, but I do think I like the Cowboys at -5.5.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's going to come down to how close can the Giants keep it, and the Cowboys have shown in the last 2 weeks that really, at least defensively, they don't have it right now. They just don't. And that's been a major storyline around DFW over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, a lot of the highly regarded and highly touted defensive superstars, namely Micah Parsons, has been pretty vocal.
Mike Zimmer back.
Mike Zimmer back. They've been pretty vocal about the fact that the defense has let them down in the last 2 weeks, especially early on in ball games. You know, credit Dallas, I guess, a little bit. They ultimately didn't win on Sunday against Baltimore, but, you know, they fell down so far early that it looked like they were not going to be able to climb out of it. And they didn't roll over, again, to their credit. They were able to cut it down, and at one point looked like they could, you know, make it a ball game. Of course, they only lost by a field goal, but they've got to come out of the gates better defensively moving forward. That has to be the top priority for Mike McCarthy, Mike Zimmer, and the entire defense.
And for the Giants, I mean, I don't know. The Daniel Jones thing isn't going to work. They're probably we'll see on the Giants. They're expected to be one of the worst teams in football. They beat the Browns like the Cowboys beat the Browns. They've got an opportunity tonight. Malik Nabers is an exciting player, but I think this is, you know, the Cowboys are this, and I thought it would be last week, and it obviously wasn't against the Ravens. Like they'll have a big game like they did in week one against the Browns. This is a great opportunity to do it. It is a Thursday night, so you never know. Things typically get ugly on a Thursday night. But you know, kind of feels like a Cowboys game, feels like a CeeDee Lamb game probably to me. We'll find ways to bet it. As far as this, I'm on Cowboys -5.5. We'll see what PJ Glasser would have been on. We'll have him in tomorrow to talk some betting with us, as he normally does on a Thursday. He'll do that on a Friday for us. Up next, our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. Obviously get his thoughts on what happened out in Provo, what will happen this week. Maybe the biggest game on the regular season schedule outside of Kansas for the rivalry implications, but for the, you know, implications on the season, this is a big one. And I want to get his thoughts on what's going on out at UNLV. That's all coming next on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
And we kick off hour number two here of Sports Daily with a little K-State talk. We do bring in our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, publisher, GoPowerCat.com, at Life of Fitz on social media, joining us. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester here, Jad Chambers producing. He's got his eye on that IHOP hotline at 869-1240. Fitz, I have never seen a Stranger College football game, I don't think, than what I saw there. I was out of town, first football I watched all weekend. I turn on the game. First play of the game I see is the DJ Giddens fumble. And I just like I was dumbfounded the rest of the way. What a weird night in Provo. We knew it got weird after dark. We knew it got weird in Provo. We didn't know it got that weird. That was weird, man.
Yeah, it was weird. It was incredibly weird and hard to explain. By the way, my AirPods didn't want to attach this morning, so you get the full glory of the outdoors today. It literally felt like a snowball.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Running downhill, and before you know it, it was an avalanche. It was just hard to imagine it going worse for K-State.
To me, I echo everything that, you know, both you guys just said. It was just absolutely bizarre, and especially knowing, you know, the relative ease in which the Wildcats were able to move the ball. You know, they had good yardage throughout the game, you know, but it's the first time in, I don't know how many years, what, 4 or 5 years, that the Wildcats did not score a touchdown in a single game. And, you know, obviously the mistakes, that was a big part of it, where it snowballed very quickly at the end of the first half. I've used this word earlier in the week to describe sort of what I noticed body language-wise. The word was shell-shocked. It kind of seemed like shell-shock, you know, from the players, Avery Johnson, from everybody. I guess the big question for me is, especially this week in preparation for Oklahoma State, how do you bounce back from, you know, being shell-shocked like that?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think being at home is a huge advantage. You know, you're going to be a lot more comfortable there. But the strangeness was just on full display. I mean, DJ Giddens has never lost a fumble, and only the third fumble apparently of his career. And it, you know, more than 400 carries. It was a freak thing. And then to have it to bounce in the open field and get scooped and scored, and then you get the turnaround, the next touchdown. But that punt return was just really bizarre, where it was muffed and somehow they turned it into a 91-yard return. You just have to accept the fact that it was one of those days.
Yep.
And if that's going to be your luck the rest of the season, you're screwed. You just are. But that's not going to persist. The odds of all of that happening are absolutely incredible. Things that just haven't happened before happened to K-State.
That's not an excuse either, Fitz, say it just – because the reality is – what else are you supposed to think if you're the coach? Like, if you're messaging, like, you can't sit there and say anything other than that, because if it is anything other than that, then that's a problem. Yep. If it is that, then who cares? You move on with your lives and you turn around and you have to come home and play Oklahoma State in a game where they're desperate, in a game, you know, you kind of have to have at this point. I think it may not end up being that way. It may not end up shaking out that way. But I don't think there's any way you think of getting to a conference championship game with more than one loss at this point. If you lose this one, you're going to have to get lucky. I'll put it that way. Right now, they still control their own destiny.
Well, the double whammy is, if you're Oklahoma State and you lose this game, you also lost tiebreakers now with K-State and Utah. Maybe BYU will be in the discussion at the end of the year. I'm not going to dismiss them. They were great on Saturday night, but you know, that loss kind of feels like what Oklahoma State did last year. They beat the teams that they were in the tiebreakers with, and then they lost to teams that weren't good enough to be in the tiebreaker, which oddly puts you at an advantage. But I'll say this, for K-State, from K-State's angle, if you want to win this game, you almost feel better about the loss, because then you're on equal footing with Oklahoma State. They're not the hungry, desperate team that you both are now. But you do need to come out and assert yourself on Saturday morning and play some pretty good football so that you can get back into rhythm and also maybe get out of your ears and quit thinking about what's between your ears and how have you screwed everything up, and just go play football and relax.
It's a Big 12 race, of course, still extremely early on, just through one game. But you've got two teams matching up in Manhattan this weekend that both have their sights set on a Big 12 title. I think that, you know, even despite what happened in Provo last weekend, at least my opinion would be the expectations for the Wildcats don't change at all, even based off of what happened a week ago, because more than likely, I mean, of course, Utah looks like they want to, or looks like maybe they will establish themselves as the class of the conference. But other than that, I mean, you're still absolutely within reach of still getting to a Big 12 title game. It's early on. A lot can happen between now and then. Oklahoma State, at the same time, probably feels the same way, that it's still within reach for them. So to me, you know, I think, like you mentioned, the fact that the game is at home, I think probably does give the edge to Kansas State. But both teams coming off disappointing losses where, you know, they felt like, you know, they, at least a week ago, they could go in and establish themselves.
Yeah, it's a shock to the system for both teams. And I don't know who is more shocked by this. K-State just had some really strange things happen. You know, credit the BYU defense. Every time they were threatened, they kind of buckled down. K-State would get a penalty and they'd keep them out of the end zone. But if you're Oklahoma State, you can maybe get some solace from the final score, but from the actual transaction of the football game, you got your butt whooped. I mean, you got beat at the point of attack. You got humiliated in a football sense. You got pushed around, and that's not something Oklahoma State's used to. Maybe that's what Utah is going to do to the entire conference, credit them. But I think they'll find out everyone is physical in this conference, and it'll add up. But it's both these teams are now in a corner, and they're going to have to come fight their way out of it. And if you're Kansas State, looking from their perspective, you get an off week, and then you go on back-to-back road games that are very winnable at Colorado and West Virginia. With that said, you've got to be a better road team. I mean, they struggled at Tulane. They stunk at BYU. So they got to figure out something about themselves within there. And then let's be blunt here. Kansas isn't what we thought, unfortunately, for KU. And, you know, it's still going to be the Sunflower Showdown. But, you know, weird things can happen. But, man, it's not the same game we thought it would be. And then you got Arizona State, Houston, Cincinnati. All very winnable games until you maybe go to Iowa State. So this game's huge. This game is enormous. You want to defend your home field, particularly in a season when you only have four home games in conference play. You just can't afford to lose on, you know, the playing surface that you own.
It is just a note, but Vegas is not buying into what happened to K-State and Utah. They're 5.5-point favorites in this game right now. Yeah. So I would look at this. Scout Oklahoma State for us for a second, Fitz, because we still have not seen the best of what we'll see from Avery Johnson as a passer.
Yeah.
Is Oklahoma State going to be gettable on the ground? Can K-State run the ball like they probably want to as they continue to develop Avery as a passer?
Yeah, they can. That is quite possible. And what's really given Oklahoma State problems through the years is quarterbacks running. Will Howard had 100 yards last year, and that not really very good performance by him, but he did run the ball with effect. And so if they can get Avery going, I mean, you'll just watch the whole team relax offensively like they did against Arizona. But you know what? Going into last year's game, we all thought Oklahoma State was dead in the water. Remember that? Oklahoma State stunk. They lost to South Alabama. They were horrible. And then they flipped the switch and got it going against K-State and started knocking people off and won enough games to get to the Big 12 title game. Well, they're kind of similar this year. They can't get their running game going with Ollie Gordon. It's hard to understand, but I would imagine that'll break loose at some point. If you're Kansas State, you want that point to be after the end of Saturday's game. So, this is going to be an interesting matchup. Both these teams need this a lot. Both teams have some exposed weaknesses now, and we'll see who can cover that up and recover.
It's probably an anomaly, Fitz, from the game a week ago, because so many things just, you know, again, snowballed for the Wildcats. But defensively, you know, outside of the secondary and, you know, that one game against Tulane, by and large, the defense has been pretty solid for the Wildcats. A week ago, you know, they really struggled with red zone defense and getting stops and getting the defense off the field. Now, they were put in bad situations. There were a lot of short fields that BYU had. But a year ago, the Wildcats defense was one of the best in the conference in red zone defense. Certainly, that wasn't the case a week ago against BYU. In your mind, for them to really sort of shore that up, taking on Oklahoma State on Saturday, what do they need to do?
Sorry, we're in the flight path of Manhattan Airport.
You're good.
You need to ask like 15 more seconds of question. What was your question?
About red zone defense. What do they do to shore up the red zone defense?
You know, everything that went wrong at BYU, that was what bothered Chris Klieman the most. You know, he thought on that second turnover to end the first half, the interception, when the defense did get to go on the field, that they just didn't stand up. And
this show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
That offended his football senses quite a bit, particularly as a defensive coach. Yeah, they just have to be better in the red zone. This has been a point that has always been really strong for Kansas State. Yeah, you might drive the field, but now you got to score, and the field gets compressed, and we're going to take advantage of that. Well, we haven't seen them do that this year defensively, and as much as they've done a lot of great things defensively, Tommy, you know, that red zone defense has got to get a lot better if this team wants to be a contender.
All right, Fitz, I want to ask you about this UNLV situation. Tim Fitzgerald, gopowercat.com. So their quarterback, Sluka, leaves the team saying he was promised something by a coach in recruitment as far as NIL that was not delivered upon. This has gotten interesting, you know, since that story broke yesterday morning, and I think you'll have good perspective on this. So what we've seen is here's how the world works in our world, Fitz. You've got ESPN and others basically getting their information. Where does that come from? On the insiders, it always comes from the agents, right? So the agents are telling them one thing. You've got the insiders of UNLV painting a picture of a very selfish player. Where do you think those insiders get their information, Fitz? Probably from coaches' relationships, right?
Absolutely.
In your world. So you've got an agent feeding national networks some information. You've got coaches feeding local beats other information. Somewhere in all of this, UNLV is going to lose their quarterback. What a weird situation with a weird following as different narratives are trying to be painted right now by two different sides.
Yeah. And you know what? My sense is they're both right. And what I mean by that is I think the promises were made, but they weren't contractually binding. And everyone says, well, why didn't you get it in sign a contract? The NCAA didn't allow you to sign a contract with NIL until after you sign. And then after you sign, they're not going to sign the contract. It rests on both parties here. I think the NCAA is entirely at fault. The family nor UNLV is at fault. The NCAA is. They have not allowed this to have some guardrails to protect the kids in any way. They didn't want this to happen, so they're just going to let it be chaos to prove their point. Well, that doesn't do your member institutions any good. You needed to, you know, the folks in Indianapolis needed to get together and say, okay, members, we've got to figure out some do's and don'ts and maybe allow the signing of agreement on terms without being a contract. That's what coaches do when they sign their, when they agree to a new contract. They don't sign it right away. They work out all the details. But you do have an signed agreement of terms. I think he probably was promised this money by a coach. And then the coach said, we got you. You know, we're done. You're not going to quit on the team. Who quits on their team? Unfortunately, this, even if he's 100% right, Sluka, this Sluka family, they're going to see their Matthew painted as a quitter. And every team that might be interested in him, even if he was right, even if, you know, he was expected to work for free when he was promised payment, they're going to see him as a guy that bailed out on his teammates. And it's just an unfortunate situation, but this is where we are. And it's just hard to fathom as a competitor, even if this went down, to quit on your team when you're in a position to make a national headline by running through the non-P5, P4 conferences and getting into the playoff. You just walk away from it. It's a sad situation, but it's semi-professional football now, and this is what we've got to devour.
But just to be fair to him, though, mm-hmm. It's a guy that's already graduated from a small college. This is it for him. He gets one opportunity in life to earn a living playing football. This season is it. And the only way, if he was promised something and it wasn't delivered upon, the only way he can do that is to try and salvage that season and try it again next year. Like, that's it. I tried it. Like, yeah, it sucks that he's quitting on his team, and that bugs all of us. But man,
yep,
if you're, do you, is it, if you and I went into our job and our boss said, here's what we're going to do. And then you get there and you're working for a couple of weeks. You're doing an awesome job. Everything's moving. And then they don't give you a paycheck. Are you quitting on your coworkers and the people on your team that have helped you been successful? If you say, screw you, man, you're not doing me. You're working me over here, and you walk away. Is that quitting on your teammates, or is that being logical?
I can tell you that other colleges, other coaches are going to look at it as quitting no matter what. But I agree. I totally agree. This kid was screwed over. But here's the problem. There's reports now that he's been offered money at other schools. I can almost guarantee you that that isn't from the schools. That's from another agent saying, hey, your agent sucks. I can get you this money.
Sure.
And once again, there's nothing in writing. You're working off of just a promise, and it could end up being a double whammy where the kid could get into the portal and then find out nobody really wants to offer you that much money. Here's $50 and a Dairy Queen gift card. We'll see how it plays out. I feel for the kid. It sucks for UNLV. But if I'm the coach, I'm like, I just literally wash my hands of it. I don't talk about it anymore. I go in the locker room and say, you're the quarterback, you're the running back. They're running back also entered the portal. And let's play some football. Let's get back to business and hope you can keep it together.
Always like talking conference realignment with you as well, Fitz. The news yesterday, UNLV, we obviously have just been talking about them, UNLV and Air Force apparently decide to stay in the Mountain West. UNLV was fielding, it sounds like, an offer from the Pac-12. Air Force was fielding an offer from the American. In your mind, is this more of an endorsement of the Mountain West, or is it an indictment on the Pac-12 and the American?
I think it is an indictment of the Pac-12 that really they've got the name, but the payment, the money won't be much different than any other non P4 conference. And that's an unfortunate truth. I think Washington State and Oregon State will enjoy a lot of the benefits of the leftover assets. But now both of those conferences need to find one more member to be a conference. You got to have 8 football members, or both sitting at 7. It feels like this should be a 14-team conference, but, what do I know? A school like UTEP, maybe North Texas, might find themselves in a really great position now, coming up from Conference USA. I'll be honest, I think UTEP's the logical one for either conference just to grab a hold of. It's got some football history. It's got some sports history. It's, kind of in your footprint. But we'll see how this all plays out. It's a realignment now is turned into a fist fight at the non-power level, and they're fighting for survival. And I got to compliment Mountain West leadership for doing a great job keeping it together as best they can.
It's one of the biggest games of the weekend. It's a 12 o'clock kick right in the primetime national window. Wildcats at home against Oklahoma State. What do you guys have going at Go Powercat to get us ready for it, Fitz?
Well, it is 11 a.m. local, but 12 p.m. Eastern. Yes, it's we got all our regular pregame stuff. The pregame podcast went up this morning. We've got a regular podcast up, and our edition of the Insiders that came out on Monday. If you want to, pull that scab off again and open the wound, you can listen to our talk about the BYU game. But we got a lot of typical coverage, and we got some football and basketball recruiting coming this week. That is pretty interesting. So lock in at Go Powercat, and we'll take you right through game time, right into another live post-game podcast following that contest hosted by Brian Hanley. It's going to be a fun weekend. I have a good feeling about K-State. This is exactly the kind of game in which they respond, but now they got to do it.
I do too. We'll pick the game tomorrow. Fitz, enjoy it. It should be an electric atmosphere there at the Bill. GoPowercat.com, at Life of Fitz on social media. Let's do it again next week.
Thanks, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. We'll react to that and everything else. We're wide open the rest of the way. The IHOP hotline is open for you, 869-1240. K-State fans also, programming note, Chris Kleiman Show coming your way tonight at 6 o'clock. Let's digest some of what Fitz said, both on the Sluka situation, Tommy, and on K-State just washing their hands of what we saw last week. That's coming next on Sports Daily.
Ninety-seven.
Welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Glad to have you here on a Thursday. All right, Tommy, it broke yesterday while you weren't here, this Slukas situation. What's your initial take on everything that's happened there at UNLV?
I like any time that I can position the NCAA as absolutely incompetent and terrible and irrelevant. They are all of those things. And I was really, really happy to hear Fitz mention that this ultimately lays at the feet of the NCAA. Maybe they're the scapegoat and they're an easy scapegoat, but I do think that there is a lot of validity to that because there has not been a comprehensive, really like understanding of what the structure is and what it should be when it comes to NIL. And this is all a product of just a lack of clarity and a lack of really firm and clear guardrails and regulations when it comes to NIL. So yeah, on its, you know, just on its head, like when you first are looking at the news, it's really, really easy to go one of two directions and to either blame the kid or to blame the university. But really, if you dig into it and you think about it critically and really, really, really look at it, this is all the fault of the NCAA for not really being willing to embrace NIL in a positive way. And then ultimately, like, kind of being forced to make concessions to the way that NIL is operated because the courts have forced them to do it. They've not, you know, with open arms, embraced this new era of college athletics. And because of that, there's so much ambiguity on what schools can do and what they can't do. And this is a direct result of that.
I would agree. I think that their hands are tied a little bit as they have to wait for some of this stuff to work out in court. I do think that the system will be much better down the road, and I think the system is still better than what it was before. But yes, the lack of embracing all of this from the NCAA from the beginning of time is a problem. I will say this, though. If a coach at any point, not necessarily the head coach, if any coach at any point promises a kid something that they don't intend to deliver on, I absolutely have the most fault with that. Don't lie to people. Don't be a crook. Don't be a snake. If you've got it and you can deliver it, great. If you don't have it and you don't have any intention of delivering it, you shouldn't be allowed in the sport. You should be kicked out of the sport. You can't do that. I mean, you can't promise something like that and without the intention. And we hear this all the time. Kevin Saul was on with us as the news broke yesterday. Coaches are out there promising kids things, knowing that they won't be able to deliver it, but they just deal with it once they get them on campus. And he's not the first person that's told me that, by the way. I've heard that a lot. That should eliminate an adult from being in a position to do that. You should be banned from the sport if you're doing that to kids, period, full stop. So that's where I lay the most blame, if that's indeed what happened.
And that's really
And when it happens to other people, if it didn't in this one, it happens. That crap should get somebody fired.
You lined out in the interview with Fitz where this information is coming from, depending on what side, what you're very hearing, difficult. You know, because yeah. it's not all, but a lot of it is manufactured and spun, you know, to fit a certain narrative. I've read reports that apparently, you know, after the 3-0 start for UNLV, that the agent went to the university and basically, you know, said that the quarterback was going to hold out unless, you know, he got more money, you know? So like, who knows exactly?
And you probably heard that from
100%,
a blogger. 100%. Heard that from a coach.
In the same way that we've heard about this promised $100,000 payment from a coach,
from the agent.
Like, we're hearing this from both sides. Oh, yeah. It's the way that it's done in professional sports all the time. And so I understand that this is a new platform to get these stories out because it's shocking because it's college athletics. It shouldn't be because this is the way that it is in the professional world all the freaking time. So when this came out, I honestly I know there were people out there that were like clutching their pearls, you know, and there was a lot of hand wringing and teeth gnashing about it. I'm like, this is kind of a product of the environment. Like, this happens in professional sports all the time. What I don't like, and I think it's an oversimplification, and I've seen people on social media do this in the last 24 plus hours. It's an oversimplification to say things like, and I know you mentioned it in the last segment, if you went to work and your boss promised to pay you and then he didn't pay you, would you? Well, of course I would walk away. Of course, if I didn't get what was promised to me, I would walk away, but I would also have an agreement in writing. And so, like, I wouldn't even go start the job unless Yeah, with an NIL collective, he absolutely sure can, right? Like, there's the understanding of, like, this is what the NIL opportunities are for me at this university.
But to Fitz's point, he can't do that until he's signed.
Correct. But at the same time, like, I have verbally accepted jobs before, and, you know, it with also signing a contract. So yeah, look, like there's a lot of give and take here. I just don't like the oversimplification of, if your boss didn't pay you, wouldn't you leave? No, it's not that simple. It's not that simple of a situation.
It is when it's that simple when you're trying to paint a kid in the light of quitting on his team. That's where it gets that simple to me. That's not quitting on your team. That's standing up for yourself.
Sure.
Right. That's what I mean. No, were there mistakes? Yeah, his agent, I'd be on the phone with my agent immediately and being like, yo, I hired you to handle this. Like, what the hell? Why did you not get this in writing? Right. You know, that's on the agent as much as that's why you have an agent.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to deal with that stuff.
And the reason that we don't see players quitting on their teams in the professional leagues is because their contracts are spelled out and signed.
Yeah.
They are legally binding documents. It's why you see holdouts. It's why you see, like, the Chris Jones situation a year ago, where he did miss a game at the very beginning of the season before the Chiefs were able to work that out with him. But we see things happen prior to season's beginning, holdouts and that sort of thing. And that's probably ultimately where this will end up, where you've got year-long contracts, more often than not, probably.
Yeah, of course,
with players that then are going to hold out if they feel like they need more before they end up getting a new contract for the next year.
Maybe, but that's where the NCAA can step in and nip that in the bud real quick and say, here's how our contracts work, right? Like, this is, unless there's a players union, which seems very unlikely to me, like, this is how this will work. Here's how a contract works. And within the structure of that contract, you know, we're not close to that, but we're probably not all that far away from it. The problem is they've got to figure out these legal battles and this revenue sharing. There are more components. They can't get there yet because they're too caught up in other things.
You say more likely than not to happen, or more likely not to happen as far as a union. I wouldn't be so quick to judge on that, because I do think that it's situations like this specifically that mobilize people to unionize. Is that the right decision? I don't know. That's not my place to say if it's right or not. I'm not in that world. But
I'll tell you, I don't think it's right.
I think
right
a players association, and maybe it's not even like for college athletics as a whole. It's more like Division I College Football Players Association kind of thing. That's the reason why things like this are formed, why unions are formed, you know, is in direct response to situations like this. The other thing that I'll mention as it relates to this particular situation, and you talk about the NCAA needing to wait until the legal battle finishes up. They're the reason for the legal battle in the first place, because they've fought this tooth and nail from the beginning. They've taken it to court. They are fighting
it
in a court of law. Charlie Baker has taken this to court and has gone time and time again saying that he's not going to embrace this. So, you know, I'm not willing to just, you know, wash my hands of their responsibility to handle this in this matter. They are the governing body for Division I college athletics, and they have fought this tooth and nail, ultimately leading to the Supreme Court making recommendations on things. So when you say, like, they're too caught up in other things, that's their own damn fault, and they need to not be caught up in these other things and actually do the job that you're meant to be doing.
Don't misunderstand me. The NCAA is to blame. I'm not saying I'm not giving them a hall pass. I'm just saying why it's taking so long is because they can't get out of the way of their own mess to be able to do it. They can't. It's going to take federal legislation to help navigate this, or it doesn't. And here's why a union doesn't make sense to me, and it hasn't, and I don't think it will. Okay, the first problem: how do football players and soccer players exist in the same union? You said to a Division I football player. Okay, how do Mountain West football players and the SEC football players fit into the same union?
Well, we're not talking collective bargaining necessarily. Like, I don't think that they're at the point right. to be able to do that. I'm not sure that would be the purpose that they would serve, because there's inequity yeah. between the conferences and the programs. It's more about having some overall representation that you can then take that players association to go and represent the players against yeah. the NCAA. Again, I don't know if that's the right or wrong move. I just think it probably is going to happen at some point.
I think it's the wrong move. The other power play that they'll never be able to overcome is there's only one path to the NFL, right? That's it. There's only one. So at some point, your bargaining power isn't as strong as you want it to be. It's just not. So what I think is far more likely and makes more sense to me, at least because I think about this stuff all the time, is for the conferences to step in, if not the NCAA, which I think it's too broad. So I think it would be the conferences and the SEC. Let's take the Big 12, since that's who we cover. The Big 12 steps in and they say, here's how our agreements look in this conference. You can sign one-year deals. You can renegotiate those. Or maybe they say, you know what? If we're going to put this in writing and you're going to get revenue sharing, you have to commit to 2 years or 3 years. And the conferences will come up with those. And they probably will get representation through the players, just because they should. But that's probably a more likely and more navigatable path, I think, than trying to do something wholesale. But the reality is, yes, the situation is there because the NCAA created a mess. I don't think that mess is going away anytime soon. But I, in no way do I ever want to not be angry with the adults promising young people one thing with the intention of not delivering.
If that happened. If that happened, we don't know.
Well, if it didn't happen here, it happens other places.
I think that should be the
worst thing about any of this is that.
You're right. I think on top of it too, though, that's a symptom of the way that the structure is currently set up, because of this imposed separation that there should be for, I don't know, moral reasons, I guess, is maybe what the NCAA is saying, the separation between the actual athletic department and the NIL collective, and how, like, the coaches can't talk about that sort. That's crap. Like, that's absolutely.
Of course it is.
And you know what? Like, yeah, if there's a situation in this particular case or in any other ones where a coach is promising money and they know full well that they're not allowed to do that, that's a problem. The fix is to allow them to do that and to have collaboration.
And it's happened. We're seeing general managers
and the actual NIL collectives. Yep. Or here's a great thought: just marry everybody together. Just put
they
like
will.
Make it part of the university.
They will. And they're hiring general right. managers. 100%. Woj left the business to go do that. That's what's right. going to happen. And the other fault too. I don't want to.
And they're
going
to drag the NCAA kicking and screaming to allow
yeah.
that to happen.
Let's not also, like, the agent screwed up here. There's no question about that, by not making sure the promise was delivered on that. So, Tommy, I've talked to and met some of the people claiming to be agents and there's too many yep. bad actors out there on that side yeah. too. Some of these people don't have any business being able to do that. And that's also not regulated like it is, you know, through the players associations and things in pro sport. Any Joe Schmo, I could go tell somebody, hey, I'm going to negotiate you an NIL contract. I'll get you the biggest, fattest. I don't know anything about negotiating right. a contract, but I go do it.
And you know
right?
what? I like, think so, that also with the NCAA, and this is again where I'm going to go back on them, that they are ultimately at fault with all of this, is the fact that they've been so like all or nothing. It's black and white. Like, this is the absolute right. wrong thing to do. And we are going to, you know, we're going to drag this out as long as we possibly can through all the courts and whatever, is that there is a gray area where you can put some just even basic guardrails in place. I think that's the word that I know Kevin Saul has used on this show before. Guardrails. I like that word, guardrails. Just as protection. That's what guardrails are protection. The NCAA has been historically, in everything that they do with enforcement, heavy-handed. They've been heavy-handed on everything, right? And in a lot of cases, it hasn't been necessary. I think a lot of it is overreach. A lot of it is trying to validate their own purpose as an organization and as a governing body, you know, by showing that they're relevant and we're gonna impose our will on these member institutions. You don't have to do that. And that's I think, fundamentally my biggest objection with the NCAA, and it has been for a long time, is their heavy-handed approach on everything. This doesn't have to be heavy-handed. This can be basic guardrails for just general basic protection of the people that are part of these institutions. That's all you need. You don't need a 400-page guidebook on rules and regulations right. and the fact that a player can't accept a cheeseburger from a coach.
I'll give you the easiest way to do that. I'll solve your problem, NCAA, if you're listening, Charlie Baker. You take verbal commitments from players, take verbal NIL offers from players. And then when the commitment's made and the dotted line is signed, you slide that NIL commitment right there along with it. Take verbals just like you take verbal commitments. Solve, problem solved. But you're right. They can't get out of their own way ever. In the history of the world, they can't get out of their own way. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It'll all happen. Just how long does it happen? And probably the power will go to the conferences where it should be in the modern world of college sports. 869-1240, your thoughts. You can leave us a voicemail on that as well. A voice message, I should say, on the Odyssey app. You just push that little microphone. If you can't call in, you can't stay on hold, maybe you got to sneak it in, you're at work, you can do that through the Odyssey app. It's a really cool feature. You can also call us the old-fashioned way on the IHOP hotline. It's open for you. 869-1240 is that number to call. The other thing Fitz talked about, K-State football. We talked a lot about KU football. Let's talk about the Cats. I think most of us are just saying, wash your hands of it. It was an outlier, whatever. What do we need to take away from that BYU game? And what does need to be fixed that wasn't just bad voodoo magic out in Provo? We'll talk about that next on Sports Daily. Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here. Don't forget, you got Royals baseball right here on KFH. It is a noon game today, so get ready for that. It'll be Michael Wacha taking the mound, trying to make it three in a row for the Royals, a sweep, and to shrink that number down to at least two. So that'll be coming in just a little bit. Tommy, real quick on K-State. We talked a bit about the Wildcats. It was strange. We all know it was strange. I'm willing to just push it aside. I don't think I'm reading too much more into it. I'm ready to push it to the side. I have talked to a lot of K-State people. There is concern with it. I don't understand the concern really with Avery Johnson. He's 19 years old. In totality, I think this season, I think he's progressing well. He's obviously a lethal runner. His decision-making is, and the ability to just, you know, control things and know the clock and know the situations. That's probably been the biggest area of growth need for me, but he's a 19-year-old just learning how to do it basically on the fly. So I think everything's been fine for me with Avery Johnson. I don't have too many concerns long-term, at least from what we've seen from him.
One game is one game. If it snowballs into a second game, especially back at home, especially a game that the Wildcats need to get up for, if there's another egg that is laid by Avery Johnson, then at that point, there can be more of a discussion. But I'm kind of with you. I'm not at a point right now where I'm overly concerned because there were a lot of things that happened in that game against BYU that were out of Avery Johnson's control. You know, we talked to Fitz about the defense and especially the defense in the red zone. That was an issue. Now the turnovers led to really short fields. So of course Johnson played into that for sure, but it wasn't all on the shoulders of Avery Johnson. And there are going to be growing pains. That's part of the development. And I think that because we haven't really yet seen those growing pains rear their ugly head yet in the Avery Johnson era, I think that it's easy to forget that they absolutely can pop up from time to time.
Which is that it's easy to forget that he's 19 years old. It's easy to forget that this is now what his fifth start in college football. He hadn't been able to watch it for very long, let alone be the person do it. That's the risk of young quarterbacks. And, you know, some people might hear me rail on the way Jalen Daniels has played, but give Avery Johnson a hall pass. And I would just tell you, that's the difference in being a, you know, a true sophomore or somebody who's been around college football now for 5 years.
It's also the difference between, we're talking one game for Avery Johnson. So
if this rolls on,
then, you know, my tune is going to change a little bit, probably starting next week. You know, because Jalen Daniels, this is carried over in multiple games.
Correct.
You know, you weren't on the show on Monday when we broke down the Kansas West Virginia game. Jalen Daniels was better. He still wasn't fantastic, but he was better. He was better in throwing. He was better in decision making. He did have an interception, but it wasn't as wildly awful as we had seen
Certainly better than needs to be potentially sat down for a minute. I have gone and tried to watch as much of that as I can in the aftermath, and I totally agree. That performance wasn't, they got to get him off the field. That, you know, it wasn't the same as it was. So hopefully that continues for him. And by the way, with Kate, because I wasn't here and we haven't talked, maybe we have. Kansas is not, again, technically speaking, like if you're Kansas, you still do have that one slight thing to go with. And it's the same thing for K-State. It's just K-State's been playing better, generally speaking. I do think two losses could get you in this year. Utah beating Oklahoma State's interesting. Oklahoma State or Kansas State, one of the two of them, will have two losses in the Big 12, right? Does Utah run it? Let's pretend like Utah runs it and is one of the teams in the championship. So now you're playing for one spot. You know that either K-State or Oklahoma State will have two losses. Arizona already lost to K-State. So if you're Kansas, at least you still have that. And you got to keep in mind, the only reason I bring this up again is because they should have won all three of those dadgum games. It's not like they're getting stomped. They should be unbeaten right now. They should be. Not they could be, not they might be. They should be, despite the poor play at quarterback. They should still be 4-0, and they're not. So, KU fans, look, I know the sky has fallen, but your destiny still is in your control for now.
Kind of. But I mean, look, like, I think it's also what makes it so enraging is that it should be, but it's not. It should be, but it's not. That's not the reality. And so you've got to take that into consideration. And look, there are other teams. I know we're only one game in to conference play, but there are other teams that would like a word. BYU, UCF.
Sure.
Colorado, Tech, West Virginia, like they're all 1-0 in the conference. And so like they would all like a word also. Like it's going to be a jumbled mess. I was hoping actually that Utah would lose last week, because if they were going to have an opportunity to lose, it would have been that game playing with the backup quarterback against Oklahoma State. It didn't happen. Utah looks to be the team to beat in the Big 12 long term. So you might only have one spot to play for. No team in the Big 12 is technically out of it at this point. It's going to be more difficult.
Well, I just mean based on what we've seen, only for the simple fact that despite losing when you should be winning, at least you can see it and say you should be winning, and they're not just, you know, getting absolutely destroyed. Utah gets Arizona this week. That's obviously a big one. They have to play BYU. They have to go to Colorado. They get Iowa State. They go to UCF. Probably unlikely that Utah runs it. So the reality is you could be looking at two potential playoff spots still, where it's one loss, two losses kind of a thing.